The purpose of this talk in the 45 minutes or so we have is twofold. One, we want to answer any questions you guys have, realizing that apologetics and extemp are both limited preparation events, so they share some common factors. We also want to take on ethics questions regarding apologetics and extemp. We really didn't dedicate a session to ethics, and if there's an ethics question that we've been putting off because of its complexity or because we dedicated some time here at the end to discuss it, want to get a chance to do that. So basically open it up to you guys. We'll probably have time to really answer in depth 4 or 5 questions. So if you have a good one.
What counts as a good question?
Not that one. Yeah.
If you have a quote that you want to use, but you can't remember who exactly it was that said it, what should you do? Like a quote, lend every man thy ear but reserve thy judgment, or something like that. Not like a news quote, but some sort of quote like that. How should you handle that if you can't remember the person who originally said it?
Quotes are wonderful. Quotes can also backfire on you. If you can't remember the person who said it, you might actually be misquoting it. You know, there's my son's in Cubbies, and he was starting his verse, and he was saying it wrong, and so he's strong-willed, and so he says, no, I was saying 2 Timothy 17:5. There aren't 17 chapters in 2 Timothy. You know? So he had to say, no, so we have this ethics discussion with a 5-year-old. If you can always say, someone said, because the point of your analysis isn't the quote. But if the quote's your introduction to launch you into the point, you know, one man said, but
some kind of a phrase that shows that there's a quotation you're familiar with, but you're unsure of attribution.
Right. But if it's the prophet Isaiah and you're doing an apologetics quote, I'd give the citation.
Another aspect on that is it's okay to paraphrase a quotation too if you acknowledge that it's a paraphrase. So to paraphrase a common quotation or to paraphrase Voltaire, which I think is the quotation every man a year. I think. I don't know the attribution on that. So yeah, I'm going out on a limb. But if you can paraphrase it as long as you identify that it's a paraphrase and say, this is not the word-for-word quotation, but it's a paraphrase. Now, we talked in the extemp camp about how sources are conversational, so we don't quote evidence word-for-word when we're citing it. So if it's a news article and you have the article and the date, then you wouldn't need to give a word-for-word quotation. But when we're talking about a quotation or a quip, something that's well known, or a famous person's quotation that you need to have word for word, you want to try to get that. One other tool you can use is bring Bartlett's or a quotation book in with you into the round. And you can look that quotation up either by author or subject matter, and a lot of them are indexed that way. So if you think about a quotation, I think that exists, or if you have an internet resource too, you can go to thinkexists.com and search for it.
Now, if you were quoting the Ten Commandments, you might say Exodus chapter 20 or something. But Jesus said, you have heard that it has been said, you should not, you know, commit adultery, or don't, you know, so you can say it in that way. Now, who said that? Well, the Lord thy God said it to Moses on the mountain, you know. What greater authority do you have than that? And Jesus says, you've heard that it has been said, but I say to you. And so that's because his analysis was the point. He was lifting himself as an authority, and I'm not going to get into that whole issue right now. But it's okay to introduce a quote, especially if your analysis is the point, not the quote. Because everybody there agreed you shouldn't commit adultery, right? But there are other issues that they weren't agreeing with, and that's what we wanted to analyze.
Is it ever okay to make up a source?
No.
Why not? I mean, we're thinkers, right? We're analysts. Can we just make up a source? Why would I oppose making up a source? If I have an opinion, I could say my opinion is, and quote me, there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, that's encouraged.
I said last week, on August 13th, 9 a.m.,
I'll give you an example. When Martha Stewart was first indicted for insider trading and later obstruction of justice and trying to hide the fact that she committed insider trading, the news, it was all over the news, right? Martha Stewart, big name personality, insider trading, etc. And I gave an extemp speech about it. In that speech, I predicted that she would walk. Well, a year later, right when her sentencing was taking place, I got a new topic. She'd already been convicted. The question was, what kind of penalty is appropriate? And I referenced my extemp speech a year earlier where I'd made that prediction. And I said, a year ago, I predicted that she would walk. Let's look at why she didn't. Let's look at what happened over the course of the trial. Let's look at where she lied under oath and all the things she did that ended her up with, 13 months in prison. And that's an example of where you could quote yourself to say, you know, my perspective has changed on this issue over the last year. Some leagues, and I'm looking here specifically at the National Forensics League, the high school equivalent in the public schools of what we do, don't really care much. They don't police the introduction of sources into extemporaneous speaking. I was watching an NFL tournament once in the outrounds with a coach who was sitting next to me as a couple of his kids walked in, and one of his students came in, I think several sources, 10 to 12 sources. So it was a heavily sourced speech. And I said, my goodness, that's a lot of research he has. And without blinking, he looked at me and said, you know they're all falsified. The coach was aware of the falsification of his student, that his student was committing this repugnant violation of basic ethics, and he was looking the other way. And I've heard of two examples of that happening in the NCFCA. It's very uncommon. And when it does, I'm happy to say coaches tend to crack down very strongly. One student in my state falsified at a state meet, was caught. The coach asked him to write a 20-page essay on the dangers of falsification. He was suspended by his club for 1 year from extemporaneous speaking, and his parents were advised to take further action. And that's the kind of penalty I think is appropriate for that sort of ethical lapse. Why is that? Now, why am I so adamant against making something up in an event that really is making something up on the fly? We're making up words as we think of them, right? We're putting together sentences extemporaneously.
But wait a minute, Cody. If I go online, I download the rules for extemp from NCFCA website. Does it say anything about falsification in there?
Not really. This has got to be original.
So what's wrong with it then?
Well, I would say, A, it's lying, and that's just... That's wrong.
And you shouldn't lie, Mr. Sparks.
On a more pragmatic scale, it's one of those things, if you were to do something like that, plagiarism in college, that is going to get you... I mean, I read an article in the newspaper the other day about a college intern in a newspaper who falsified some stuff, and she was immediately kicked out, and her reputation's ruined. I mean, she's never going to get another job if anyone hears about that. And so not only is it just, it's just plain wrong, it's just stupid. I mean, if you're going to practice that in high school.
Now, she works for a newspaper, like a local newspaper, mm-hmm. And do you think if she tries to apply for a newspaper in some other state, will they be able to find that information, either by a phone call or by a web search?
They publish an apology in the paper.
So,
yeah.
Now it's part of public record. What we must do is different than what we ought to do. And in ethics, you're bound not just by law, you're bound by conscience. And what we ought to do, the right thing. Test all things, hold fast to that which is true. And if something is, you don't have a clean conscience approaching something because you don't know the source, you can't, don't use it.
This gives me an advantage. I have more sources than my opponent. I'm going to say two things about that. One, it creates a crutch that's very difficult to get away from. Mm-hmm. If you only have four sources that you can think of, and you inflate that artificially to eight by making a source up, you have to do that the next round in order to maintain where you are. If you don't learn the skill of finding the source and inserting it in a speech, you'll never have it. That's a skill that you have to work at, and your speech also loses, this is the second issue, it loses the content and the creativity that source would provide. There's only so much input that Jason Blair could add to his New York Times pieces, because he didn't interview the original sources. There's only so much content that the Jimmy's World piece that won the Pulitzer Prize for journalism, but was a falsified story about a 7-year-old coke addict on the streets of D.C. There's only so much original content that she could have in her own imagination. Eventually, she would run out. So she's limiting herself to what she herself can come up with. Jason Blair limited himself by not doing what he said he was doing, interviewing those primary sources.
How you do anything is how you do everything. If you go to college, your freshman year, and you have 20 units, be prepared to spend 60 hours each week on that class, 40 hours outside of class, 20 hours in class, working on your subject matter. And if you have taught yourself at this stage of the game to lie to yourself and to cheat, to make up sources and to do it the easy way, when you get to college, you're going to be tempted to do the same thing, and your ideas will be less original. You will not stand out. And so the person who's doing the effort now, even if you never, ever break to an out round in your life, and you're in the league for 6 years, you never break the out rounds in debate, you never break the out rounds in extemp or apologetics or any event, but you're learning the discipline of doing the academic portion of forensic debate. When you get to college, you'll be original and creative and ethical. So that's a competitive advantage.
Someday, guys, you're going to have to shave. When you shave, you have to look at yourself in the mirror. Unless you go with the full beard and the Ted Bundy look. But then you have to survive the jokes, and that's no fun either. So in order to be able to look at yourself and be comfortable with what you did, look, this is a proving ground. What you have here is a small test area that's very safe. As I told the extempers, if you flunk out completely in a round, if you totally draw a blank, the worst thing that could happen is nothing. That's not the way it is afterward. You know, the worst thing that could happen is you get an F on a test. You lose your job. You get into a car accident. You fail the driver's test. Twice. You know, these are bad things that can happen to you in the real world. In this protected world of NCFCA, the worst thing that could happen to you is nothing. And when you have a safety net, you want to take advantage of that. There's no reason to sacrifice your integrity and make up a source or otherwise violate your ethics in a forensics round.
Question back here.
Also regarding sources, I don't know if it's happened or not, but what if you took, not that you made up a source, but you used one source that was then cited by two different, you know, news agencies, and in your speech you cite those two separate agencies, even though their root is actually just one source. So it appears that you have two sources.
Right.
You actually only have one.
It is two sources.
It does
count as two sources. Here's why. And we actually had this discussion over on the extemp side with the concept. We call it double sourcing or triple sourcing. When a news story comes out on the AP Wire or Reuters or International Herald Tribune or U.S. Newswire, or whatever the Wire report is that gets republished, it'll get published in all sorts of local newspapers around the country. So an AP story will be published by Seattle Post-Telenser, Denver Post-Gazette, and the Dallas Morning News. Those three will all republish the same story. Hundreds of newspapers will republish it. And when they do that, they're purchasing the rights to that article.
Because they don't have newsrooms at the San Jose Mercury News. I mean, they may have two reporters, and one's covering the freeway accident, and the other one's covering or Sacramento or something, the politics of the state. And so if there's a story coming out of Afghanistan, it's on the AP Wire. I think it's different in debate. In debate, if you're quoting a source because there could be bias on their issues, you could say, the Aris report, as reported by Newsweek magazine on, you know, July 15, 2009, stated that.
You know, look at it this way. In extemp, we're more concerned with sources as a conversation. In debate, we're interested in sources as evidence.
You have to prove something is true.
The original source material. And so you would always go back to AP in a debate round. If it's an AP byline, you'd always go back to that. But in an extemp round, if it was published in the Post-Intelligencer, it's a Post-Intelligencer article. Even if it was written by an AP writer and originally published on an AP story. That's also a decision that you guys as extempers need to make. I've seen some extempers say an Associated Press article republished in the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. Other extempers take that opportunity to get two sources out of it. And I don't, you know, it saves you pen and ink. You know, the idea is that you're trying to find ways to cut costs and print more articles. And the alternative is for an extemper to copy and paste a section of that article into Google, locate the original AP article, and print that out again. So it saves you a step if you know that it's the original article anyway.
So if that newspaper purchased the rights, then it's legitimate, just like when we purchased the Gold Book, now we have rights to it.
Right. The same way. Or, I don't know if you guys have heard in libel law, every republication is a new libel. The concept that if the Associated Press article libels someone on its text in an article, then every publication that purchased the rights to that article can also be sued. In other words, it's responsible for the content just the way the Associated Press is. Kind of shows you that every republishing agency is responsible for the content. Jimmy?
Find like a stat or a poll somewhere, like you see it in the morning news, maybe a month or maybe just a couple weeks ago, and you see that kind of relates to what your topic is, maybe extemp or apologetics. What, do you just kind of quote? And if you can't quite remember where it came from.
Question, guys, was if you see a survey and don't see attribution for it, like maybe you see a study the morning of the extent tournament, how do you handle that? How can you bring it into the round? Let's hear from some experienced extempers here. How do you guys handle that? Shane?
Personally, with a statistic, if I don't have it in front of me, I'm probably not going to quote it. That's just a personal preference from the point of I'm just going to save on that.
But your mom is smiling in the back of the room right now.
Yeah, if I don't have a statistic on a piece of paper in front of me where I can know that I know that I know that that's what it is, I'm probably not going to quote it because inevitably when you do that, there's the judge sitting across the table that read that study this morning and he has a different idea of what the numbers said. Yeah. So.
Couple things to add to what Shane said is that if the study came out this morning, then you can say a new study out this morning found. And if it's extent, and you're not necessarily providing that attribution, but it shows you don't know the source, and you're not claiming to know the source. You're not making up something, but you're identifying the fact that a study came out that found something, or polling data is like that too.
Especially if it's not central to your analysis. You know, so the study came out and said that 90% of doctors support Obamacare. You know, a study came out this morning that said 90% of doctors support Obamacare. Now, even if that were a valid study that I could cite today, does that mean that we ought to move as a nation towards Obamacare? Right? So how you use the information also becomes part of the ethical discussion.
I mean, if it's the core of your speech, you know, if it's the center point of your discussion, you might want to put some time into researching that. I know I gave up the heat repeat topic that I had. Who has a heat file in their extent box? But I'd heard that morning, I saw the highlights from the night before, because I, you know, ESPN highlights, what are you going to watch that night at a tournament? And I'd seen the highlights. So I taught, and I remembered Shaq's rebounding and points per game numbers. So I referenced those that I'd seen the night before. But what else are you going to do?
It's good to have a crazy memory.
Yeah. Or just be a nerd. You know, the other thing is if it's a long time ago, then you might want to not cite the study at all. If it's something recent and you can pull that out, then yeah. Remember that older studies that you're not familiar with the source, you may also not be familiar with the numbers. Those things tend to get fuzzy. And the NFL line goes that 78% of all statistics are made up on the spot.
Last night there was Keith Olbermann on MSNBC said that 75% of the people that watch Fox News do not believe that the health care is going to be beneficial to others. And so they themselves did their own polling system upon the other three networks that they were saying. So one was 35%, one was 31%, and Fox was 75%. If they're using those sources within their speech, and they're going at it as fast as they can, and they're trying to make sure that they can quote those people, is Keith Olbermann a source that they want to use within their speech? Is Keith Olbermann something that they can use?
They hold him back. Yeah.
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 Okay, so Keith Olbermann, no matter who he is, no matter what he thinks, is still someone that they could use ethically versus what they believe.
You can even create quote crazy people, yes.
Okay.
Well, another thing too is he's MSNBC, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you could cite the MSNBC survey reported by Keith Olbermann.
The worst person in the world.
another factor there is if it's a debate, in example, you want to have that methodology with you because it's a study you're quoting. And you'd want to know the date. You want to know the number of people surveyed. You want to know, is it a phone survey or a face-to-face thing? Or did they do it online? Or how was the survey conducted?
Well, and see, that was my point, is that ethically, what are they able to use so that they know that the sources that they're using is credible?
Extemp, because of what Larry was saying, the citation versus quotation, has a lower bar. So you're not expected to inform your audience, unless there's something relevant in the methodology. Maybe the methodology of a study is being challenged, and that's a prominent figure, and you know there's something, news article about it or whatever.
Now, I don't want to suggest that you can go into the prep room without a box. I don't want you to suggest that you can go into a prep room and walk out and tell your coach you had 12 citations in your speech when, you know, 9 of them were, and this guy said, and that guy said, you know, a citation is, you know, the New York Times, November 15th, said, you know, the January edition of Foreign Affairs reported, you know, you're going to have an actual hard copy piece of paper that you're going to use for your analysis. But it's your analysis, so you can introduce citations and quotes with reckless abandon, almost.